Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. This is Greg Presland on Red Radio on Planet FM, and it's my privilege today to have a very special guest who I'm going to talk to, and he's someone who's not a household name, but he's someone who's had a huge effect on New Zealand politics over the last 11 years, and it's Lyn Prentice, one of the masterminds behind the website The Standard. And just as a disclosure, I personally blog as Mickey Savage on The Standard, so I have a pretty good idea of how the site works and what happens. So welcome to you, Lyn.
Thank you.
First of all, The Standard, where did the name come from?
It was originally a standard newspaper that was put out in about 1920 or so, or 1914, that sort of era. And that ran through until about 1961. And pretty much it was a Labour Party or unionist type newspaper, and we just picked up the name. The actual name for The Standard is The Standard Version 2.0.
So it's the modern version of the original concept.
Yeah.
And what's your role in particular? You're the SysOp behind the site?
SysOp. But basically, I just run the mechanics of the site, make sure that it actually stays up and running. And because I've been there for so long, I have a fairly strong impact on almost the social conditioning on the site.
And you're one of the trustees of the entity which looks after the site, basically.
Basically, me and Mike Smith.
And The Standard first appeared in 2007, is that correct? So 11 years ago.
Yeah, we started playing with it about March in 2007, actually put it live in August 2007.
Mm-hmm. And back then, blogging was a relatively new thing that was happening, wasn't it? There'd been KiwiBlog around since 2003. Whale All appeared right about the same time as The Standard, but there weren't a huge number of blog sites back then, were there?
Well, there were a lot of little ones, but there weren't any particularly big ones, as in there weren't a lot of people on them.
And in terms of left-wing blog sites in New Zealand, what else was there at that time?
I'm not sure. There were sort of things like No Right Turn and various little ones floating around all over the place. And some of them, like No Right Turn, have continued on till today. But most of come, gone, as people have shifted around and done different jobs. The big thing for The Standard was it was one of the very first multi-author sites, and that's what's allowed it to be long life.
So individual burnout doesn't affect it so badly.
Yes.
And 11 years on, and we still have The Standard going strong. KiwiBlog's still there, Whale Oil's still there, and The Daily Blog is the fourth major political blog in the country. Any reason you think why those blogs have stood the test of time and are still around?
Well, basically there's a motivation under each of them. KiwiBlog is hooked into Dave Farrar's business directly or indirectly. Whale Oil seems to use it as a way of making money. Our one is just because people have volunteered for it all the time.
And what are the funding arrangements for The Standard?
There aren't any particularly. We just run, it costs about $150 a month to run. And we just use some of my gear that floats around, and we hook onto the fibre that we have available. And
so no regular income for the authors?
The authors don't have any income. We don't advertise. Main reason why we don't is it takes too much time to actually go and try to raise the money, and we don't need much.
Where did the impetus for The Standard come from?
Originally, it was a group of unionists inside of Wellington, mostly, who were sort of getting a little bit annoyed by KiwiBlog in particular. So they drafted me in as someone who actually knew how to set one up, because I'd been involved in Usenet and everything else. In fact, the first time I got on the net was about in 1979.
You're one of the originals then.
Not original, but pretty close to New Zealand. I was at Waikato University, so yeah. That's where the gateway was.
And I had a look. The first post was by All Your Base, and it was the heading was Get Your Story Straight, John. And it had two comments, and I had a look at the page views, and it had five unique page views.
Yes. had a very slow start.
And how did the popularity of the standard increase from there? What was done to improve readership?
Nothing much. I mean, it would just get linked in by other blogs, sites, and people going off and disagreeing with it mostly.
And I had a recent look. 2015, the standard had 5,700,000 individual page views. And last year it was down a bit, but it was still at 4,700,000. So
yeah, well, post-election, and particularly with a leadership change in that case, in Labor, okay, that always pushes it up. But basically it goes up and down over time, depending what stories floating around are.
Yeah. What's the philosophy behind the standard, and why do you think it's worked?
The standard basically runs pretty much on robust debate. We're not a broadcaster. We essentially live off the comments from people going off and talking about the topics people have written about. And that's so you'll get posts that actually have 500 or 600 comments on it. You'll get posts that have 30. And it just depends how much it appeals to people.
You get that interesting combination, don't you? You get the occasional well-written, deeply thought-out post where there won't be much interaction. But if you get a breaking story with a very short introductory post, then yeah, you can get hundreds of comments.
Yeah, and it just blows out. And over time, we've managed to get rid of the people who can't think when they write comments, so, because they really find it not a particularly conducive environment, because it is very much for robust debate.
Yeah.
So people go off and talk crap, and they will tend to get interesting commentary about their personal traits returned to them.
And the breaking stories you do, it's collective journalism, isn't it? You get lots of people analysing different parts of what's happening and contributing their bits.
Yeah, and the authors usually disagree with each other, so you'll find about 5 stories on the same topic where literally there's a lot of disagreement.
Yeah. In terms of the ratios of male and female readers of the site, blogging, you certainly get the impression it tends to be a male-oriented occupation, habit, whatever you want to call it.
Well, when we started, and the first time I really managed to get some good stats on it, which come from Google Analytics, we were sort of sitting around about 15%, and that would have been, I don't know, about 2013 or thereabouts.
So 15% female.
15% male. Yep. Yeah. They can't do it completely accurately. They'll only have a sample size of about 50% of our readers. These days, we're currently running up around about 40%, just under. And it tends to kind of sometimes go above, sometimes below.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite different from most of the other major sites around.
And in terms of the tone of the site, what have you done in relation to that, and do you think that's made a difference?
Yeah, it has. The basic, we still have a lot of the woman in particular going off complaining, but it's not a particularly polite site, but having a robust debate and being polite are actually two quite different things. We also have a lot of the right-wingers going off and saying it's not particularly polite too. But what you've got over time is people recognise that you can go on there and you can just put your point of view.
Yep.
Okay? Anyone that's too extreme in their behaviour gets the boot.
Fair enough, too. Now, there have been a few times when I've thought the standards really stood out and had a significant role in stories that are breaking and developing. One of them was Len Brown and Bevan Chuang when the straight after the 2013 Auckland Council elections, where the news of the affair had broken, and by whale oil, and it seemed that there was some sort of plan there to try and divert the democratic decision that had been made.
Yeah, the one of the problems you have with online media in particular is you get tsunami effects, which is the first person going off and pushing off a site, pushing off a story, can also try and control the meme. Okay, one of the things you tend to find with the standard in particular is a very contrarian. not just the authors, but also all the way through the commentary. So you tend to find stories like that. You'll get the journalists wandering off and having a look and seeing what the other side is.
And with that particular story, can you recall what the response of the authors and the readers of the site was?
Actually, I can't particularly because I didn't write on it. But I know that there were an awful lot of posts on it and a lot running through. Well, when I'm reading the site, I'm actually mostly not reading the comments particularly. I'm mostly just reading what's the behaviour look like.
Yeah. Mm. And it was that relationship between the site and dominant journalistic attitudes, wasn't it? So the intent was to try and present to the journalists an alternative view of what was happening.
Yeah, basically one of the characteristics you always see in the Standard is a very contrarian. Hmm. The authors are, the commentators are.
Yeah. Another time when I thought the Standard stood out was the Peter Jackson and the Hobbit crisis.
Yeah, well, they've struck directly into the unionist side of it, okay, because basically what was going on there was going off and saying, no one really has a right to form a union. So we got an awful lot of traffic over that.
And the whole thing was presented as some sort of crisis created by the union movement, wasn't it?
Yeah, whereas in the actual fact, it was almost the other way around. It was someone going off and saying, we want to be able to go off and do exactly what we want without anyone going off and preventing us from doing it from the corporate side.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that Irish Bill, one of the authors, wrote a number of posts where he basically laid out how the whole dispute was going to develop and what the parties were going to do at different times and how it was going to be resolved. And then you go back a couple of months later and he had it dead right, didn't he?
That's right, because basically it was a classic PR campaign coming in from Warners and the National Government.
And do you think that the site presenting that alternative view of what was happening again fed into the dominant journalist narrative?
Yeah, to a degree. The difficulty with it was because so much was under the covers in that particular dispute, what you got was essentially a whole pile of people just going off and stating their opinions without much detail at the bottom level. Mm. That's why Irish is forward look on it, saying this is what the campaign will develop like, was so interesting.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we got a lot of scepticism running through it.
Yeah. Dirty politics.
Oh, yeah. We knew that was going on since about 2008. Okay. We foreshadowed it in the Standard because we would have Whale Oil and his minions diving into the site trying to disrupt it.
Yeah.
And eventually that was the main reason we wound up with putting a strong moderation, so strong behavioural moderation system in.
And what do you say to the people who claim that the left are just as bad as the right and engage in the same sorts of tactics?
Generally not. One of the primary reasons for putting the Standard in the first place was you tended to wind up on the left with having a lot of siloing, okay, where groups on the left wouldn't talk to each other. One of the points about the Standard was to go off and get rid of that. And I think it's pretty successfully done that.
In terms of the tactics that the right were obviously engaged in, this is feeding of information. And
we've never done it. I haven't run across anyone who's ever done it in the left. You see the odd little campaign going off on something like through one of the unions or something, but they're obvious and they're doing it in their own interests, and it's overt.
Yeah.
It's not covert.
So no flow of information from the Prime Minister's office to Standard writers who then put it out for the media to use?
No. I mean, generally what you find is we comment on stuff that's already in public. There's very seldom anything coming through from the back ends. Mm. In fact, you often get the idea that basically the Labor Party the Labor parliamentary wing of the party would be quite happy if we weren't here.
Yeah. another story, Dong Hua Lu. During the heat of the 2014 parliamentary election campaign.
Yeah, where apparently it was Labor getting donations when in reality it was National.
That's it in a nutshell. And so again, what was the people of the site once the Herald made the allegation that Labor had received $100,000 from Mr. Liu?
Well, basically, it was sort of like, show me the money, because no one had any, couldn't even figure out where this would have gone if it'd gone through. And it's not the Labor Party and even the Greens are pretty straightforward. If you want to go and find something out, you just go off and ask someone.
Another story which was very popular in terms of views was Ponytail Gate, and that's a story which Bomber Bradbury at the Daily Blog actually broke, and I thought he did a very good job because he didn't try and sensationalise it. He let the young woman speak for herself.
And that was great. And basically, it was very interesting in our particular case for watching exactly where the breakdowns went through with that, because they went right across the spectrum. Mm. Okay. The woman in particular were extremely annoyed by it.
And the Standard's certainly a different site to the Daily Blog, but there was a degree of... there was no coordination of stories, was there?
No. Well, we've never particularly coordinated anything with Martin.
Degree of respect for the quality of the story and the importance of the story.
Yeah. Basically, the reason why was there was no bullshit in that story. It was a very straightforward description of what had actually happened.
Yeah. And probably the latest example of an ongoing series of stories has been about Jamie Lee Ross, and it's provided a fascinating insight into how we all thought the National Party worked for years, hasn't it?
Well, the National Party, the modern National Party, pretty much started after 2002. Okay, they did a massive reorganisation of the system. It's very centralised, and everything from which candidates come through. In actual fact, what the right often go off and say the left is doing, the monolithic Labor Party, that's actually what National does. Okay, they organise funds, they have enormous amounts of donations going in at various times, and usually done non-transparently.
So a Borg collective of
the Borg
single-minded approach to...
Whereas as you go off on the left, and what you find is individualistic stuff going off big time.
Lots and lots of fiefdoms and, yeah.
Yeah, little fiefdoms, little people doing their own thing. And you see it all the way through the Standard as well.
Yeah. Now, one story which the Standard was actually at the centre of, rather than reporting on, was all about the attempted hack of the site back in 2015, or... should we say the conspiracy to hack the site, to be more accurate?
Yeah, well, that was kind of weird. It's sort of, we wound up with about 4 or 5 months of this that, what's his name? Rachinder, I can't pronounce his name, was basically going off and talking about this on Facebook and Twitter and everything else. And it's sort of like, was rather weird because there was no corroborating evidence for it. There was nothing about it that we could really go off and put our finger on and say, yes, that's what it is. And over time, that steadily came out, okay? But it did mean that when they first started coming out, I had to go off and dig my way through the logs, which was, months worth of logs I had to do. So,
Mr. Cameron Slater also faced charges, along with Mr. Rachinder, didn't he?
Yeah, because eventually I was reasonably convinced that there was actually something going on, so I went off and laid a complaint with the police. I'm a computer programmer. I run IT systems all over the damn place, at various places, and this sort of stuff is just something you do not want to have happen to computer systems.
Yeah,
it's too expensive. It takes too much time to go and look at it.
What involvement did you have with the police decision to offer Cameron Slater diversion?
None. Absolutely none. I didn't even know that it had happened. And so after I laid a complaint, I got absolutely no information back whatsoever.
And how did you feel about that?
When I found out what had actually been going on, I was incredibly annoyed. Since I was actually in Italy at the time of working, it was also a bit frustrating because I had to organise to come back here early so I could go off and get into court. When they were actually going off and doing the very final stages of pushing the diversion through.
And did you feel that you were a victim in what happened?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I basically had to do an awful amount of work because someone went off or tried to organise a conspiracy to break in to my home machine, because that's where the standard server lives.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to another subject, Matthew Hooton has said that he reads The Standard because he says it gives him an insight into progressive thinking, particularly progressive thinking amongst Labour politicians and activists.
Yeah, and you see this all the time. The journalists, all the political journalists seem to have us sort of either hooked onto their Facebook accounts or their Twitter accounts, or you see them periodically coming in. Same for the staffers inside of government.
So it lets people have a peek into what's happening with progressives and their mindsets.
Both inside Labour, outside Labour, critical of Labour, used to be in Labour.
Greens.
Yeah. New Zealand First people.
Yeah.
I mean, this current coalition is almost exactly what's been happening inside Labour for the last 11 years.
Yeah.
Different groups are going off and arguing.
One thing that the site's been blamed for, and my personal view is it's not, it shouldn't be blamed for it, is that The Standard caused the demise of David Chera's leadership. What comments do you have on that?
The thing about this is, I actually live in the electorate, always have done. I did an awful lot of work for Helen Clark over the years, for the last, I don't know, 25 years or so. There was no particular support for going off and putting David Chera in the first place, okay? And as time went by, it sort of, amongst all sorts of people inside the party, it was sort of like, why is he there? He doesn't fit.
Actually, I did sense a hardening of views after the November conference where there was all sorts of drama and MPs told to vote certain ways and toe the lines. And
yeah. And for me, it was when he went off and had a go at a story about some beneficiary, ACC beneficiary, who happened to be painting his roof. I mean, everyone who ever has been around people who have been on ACC, some weeks it's okay, some weeks it's not. What you can't usually do is sit in a chair or work for very extended periods of time. But you have to work, because otherwise your muscles will go down.
Yeah. So it was far too judgmental a speech, wasn't it?
It looked like it was designed by someone to go off and play well for the media. And the Labour Party's not there for playing for the media, but the Labour Party's there to go off and do jobs and to support people that need support.
And after David Chera stood down, we then had the leadership campaign, which was the first, under Labour Party's democratic rules, where rank and file get a say in who the leader's going to be.
Yeah. It had always been, prior to that, it had always been the caucus going off and saying who the leadership was, okay, and at least the parliamentary leadership, because that's really what it is. But in particular, the decision to put Chera in place by the caucus really rubbed up strongly against the party membership, and the party itself took notice of that and went off and set up the new democratic campaigns. And that overall has worked pretty well. It does cause an awful lot of kerfuffle while it's going on, but it's now becoming very much an established process.
It's something that the membership really enjoys too.
Yeah, I think large numbers of them wander along to all the meetings. They have a look at it. They then proceed to wander off to The Standard and argue about it.
Yeah. Now, that first contest, David Cunliffe won it convincingly.
Yeah.
And if you read The Standard at the time, he was the overwhelming favourite amongst authors and writers, wasn't
yeah.
it? And commentators.
After Helen Clark's, the 9 years that Helen Clark was PM, there had been a reducing number of MPs over time and hadn't had a lot of renewal going on until very late. And the problem is you can't really take an untested politician and put them in a leadership role. So the first one running through, and Democratic one, was really an argument about, should we put someone inexperienced in, or with a lack of experience, or should we put someone who's already been cabinet minister? And to a large extent, that's the reason why David Cunliffe was the favourite.
Yeah. And then we had the second leadership campaign where Andrew Little came through.
Yep.
The numbers certainly were much tighter that time. And again, my impression of the Standard is that support was much more broadly spread amongst the different candidates. Is that your impression as well?
It was.
So again, the Standard is not a driver of opinion, it's more a reflector of opinion.
It reflects.
Okay. What do you see as being the future of the site?
It's very, as long as people are willing to volunteer to go off and write stuff, write posts, starter posts for discussion, then basically all it requires is a computer and a fibre link. So I would think it would just carry on.
Doing the same old, same old, but...
Same old, occasionally changing stuff. But, like, for instance, our policies and things hasn't really changed since about 2010. We also haven't really changed how the site looks since about 2010. Mm. If I ever get some time, I might try it, but...
I appreciate it's resource-intensive, but what about video? Bomber Bradbury's tried in the past to bring video into New Zealand social media politics, and I thought it was a good idea, but he didn't quite do it right. Is that something you think the Standard should think about?
It'd be easy enough to do. I mean, certainly technically it's pretty trivial. The real issue about it's the same problem we have through the Standard all the time, which is you've got to find someone willing to actually go and do the interviews or write the posts or anything like that.
So it's time and resources.
It's time and resources. The resources for going off and pushing it up and everything else is pretty straightforward. My partner actually does video for a living, or partially for a living. And if you're working on this sort of stuff, it takes quite a lot of effort to get everything set up and running.
And then once it's going, it's all good.
Yeah, once it's going, it's pretty straightforward. But just simply shifting gigabytes of data around the network is a real problem.
And what about the future of blogging in general?
I think it'll always be there. The main reason why is blogging is very two-way, okay? Or most of the time it is, depending what type of site you're on. And particularly on our one, it allows you to do talkback radio without having a high degree of censorship on it. Yeah. So. One of the reasons why the Standard has lasted as long as it does is because we don't really censor that much. We'll censor for behaviour, but not much else.
Yeah, as long as people put up a coherent argument and stick to the post, then...
Yeah, we tend to kick people off for bad behaviour because basically they're going off and abusing people, talking crap.
Yeah.
Okay, sucking up bandwidth.
And blogging has changed in that 7 or 8 years ago, you would have intense debates on the Standard, and people like Cameron Slater would pop across and argue their point.
Yeah.
But now those sorts of arguments tend to happen on Twitter, don't they? Blogs are becoming slightly more of an enclave of similar-minded people, although on the Standard we do have regular right-wingers come and push counter-views.
The real difference is if you go and look at Twitter in particular, it's the realm of the witty, okay, without much depth.
Yeah. You've got to be very good within, what is it now, 280 characters?
280 characters, originally 140. Yeah. Whereas the Standard, even the comments are long form. You'll see comments are out there that are, you know, sort of 700 or 800 characters, 700 or 800 words.
Yeah.
You also find some that are only would fit within Twitter, but they're much rarer.
Yeah, Felix was one commentator who could fit within a tweet every time and still make a very good point, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah, but it's an art form for doing it. And you really can't do backtrace. So you can't go off and say, and here is where the argument comes from, very easily, unless you've got a long form somewhere that you can link to.
Okay, we're reaching the end of the time for our show. Can I, on behalf of the Progressive movement in Aotearoa, New Zealand, thank you, Lynn, for all the work that you've done over the last 11 years, and hope for a long time in the future as well. And may the Standard continue to be a popular site and reflect the thinking of progressive people everywhere.
Thank you.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.
Your language.